Welcome to Mocktails and Masterpieces with the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. Today's episode is sponsored by Anthony Team Realty. Good evening. I'm Dana Stone, the Executive Director of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, and I want to thank you so much for joining us for this very special episode of Mocktails and Masterpieces. Today, we're going to be talking about Black Keys, the evolution of the Black classical arts, and I'm so excited to have Joshua and Jared Thompson here with me to talk about this concert, which has already gained so much momentum and excitement in our community that it's sold out. 5 weeks in advance of the performance. Joshua is our creative partner in residence, but I'll let him take a quick moment to introduce himself again for those that are joining us for the first time.
All right, my name is Joshua Thompson, and I'm a pianist and a music sociologist who's been really fortunate to be the creative partner in residence for 2 seasons now with the ICO. So I've really enjoyed rehearsing and playing with the organization, kind of working behind the scenes at an executive level. And for those of you who have been reading program notes for the last 2 seasons, you're welcome, because I do that too.
And we'll also take a moment to introduce your twin brother, Jared.
If I must, yes. Jared's no stranger to the art scene here in Indianapolis, or even regionally and nationally, but I'm a little biased, but yes, Jared is a phenomenal composer and saxophonist and arts advocate and band leader based here in Indianapolis. And so it's not mistaken identity for some of you out there. If you think you're seeing one or the other, it's not you, it's us. There's one of me and one of him. And I'm just really excited to be able to work and play and create with another exceptional artist, but it makes it a little bit more special when you're that exceptional artist is your best friend. So this is going to be a lot of fun. We've really been looking forward to it.
So speaking of looking forward to it, as our creative partner in residence, this was sort of a project we had talked about for a long time. You know, you got involved with the ICO, you know, back in 2020, when we sort of conceived a brand new education program called What Makes Music American. And I know that in working with you, we felt like we had so much to gain from your expertise and insights, and in introducing us to new music and new composers, and just really helping us serve and reflect and perform in a really authentic and engaging way for the community. So let's talk for a quick moment about the evolution of Black Keys, which I know has sort of been in your world for some time.
It's been in my world for a while, since about 2020. This new project that folks are going to see, for me, it's almost a toddler. Just had a lot of fun. What I really do in research and performance is put together little thematic shows that have a bit of narration and infuse the story that I think classical music often takes out, right? That narrative, whether it be social, historical, or kind of like musical fiction, because I just found that to be fun. And so I was doing that quite a bit anyway. And then, of course, we all remember 2020, we had normal lives, and then everything just hit that pause button for a long time, myself included, right? And, you know, we're in quarantine, and much like other artists, we're being told to practice, and now's the time you're supposed to create. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. And then after several months, I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? I was really looking for purpose to my practice. And then the other part was, I was also looking for a way to pay my rent, right? Because nobody was touring anywhere. And so money wasn't coming in. I was like, I've got to do something. And so what I did was I took this program that I had in my head. It was about a series of about 8 little musical vignettes. And I opened up my home to the community of Indianapolis and turned it into a live performing arts venue. And Black Keys was the first program of that first salon series that I did throughout the summer and fall of 2020 with a couple of special guest artists. And that's where it started, in my living room. And we had small concerts for folks. And then it kind of just took off from that, where the Lotus World Music and Art Festival in Bloomington called and they wanted to see it. And then the Greencastle Music Festival wanted to see it. And then University of Puget Sound in Tacoma, Washington wanted to. And I'm like, we have a thing. And then we all, between the ICO and ourselves, We're like, hey, let's put this in the grander vision that you had originally, taking this music and expanding it to include an entire orchestra, an entire dance company, exceptional vocalist, and of course, Jared, to do this. So that's where it started. It started in my living room when I thought I had nothing to do. And here we are. So it's been a fun, fun evolution and journey. And I'm just really, really excited to see it, you know, on stage, and also almost more excited to have it be done so we can all take a breath and just kind of mellow out for a bit. So I'm geeked. I'm really geeked.
Well, we're really enthused also. So thinking about then and now, what are some things that audiences are going to experience that they would not have seen when this was just a solo, not say just a solo, but when it was solo piano? What are the additions? What makes this worthy of all the hype?
Well, it's worthy because I wrote it. No, I'm kidding. It's just fun. It's fun stuff. I think what's really nice is what I intentionally do with this program and others are, I always find it so interesting where you can take the same set list, and if you just change up the order, that's a possibility for a completely different story. Or the emphasis on one part of the story becomes a little bit heightened or lessened. That's what I've had a lot of fun with. And a lot of these pieces are meant to be swapped in and swapped out. It really is a cultural and musical mosaic that represents the last 3.5-4 centuries of Black composers and classical music. So there's that part. The other thing is you're getting so much more volume and texture and depth and color that really helps to enrich that storytelling element. And it positions the music where it should have been all along, on a stage, publicly performed for communities all over the country.
So in thinking about additions, one key addition is the Ellington Three Black Kings, the movement that movement that Jared will be joining us on. So let's talk about jazz and let's talk about classical music, because oftentimes we think of them as two entirely separate entities, but one was born from the other and one borrowed from the other. And maybe Jared, you can talk some about your experience with jazz and connection to classical music and how you see this piece fitting into the fabric of the production that we have assembled.
Sure. It's, you know, I was raised in the same household as my brother and sister. And we all were trained classically in piano since we were like 5 years old. So I'm not a stranger to classical music at all. It's just that jazz just had more of a, it was more emotive to me.
I just have to say real quick, Jared was a monster classical pianist though, like really, really good.
I worked at it. Yeah, I tried. Yeah. But the two worlds really aren't that separate. I think a lot of times, just the way that Western music is set up, the way that we categorize Western music is that they put them as polar opposites. But like you said, a lot of classical composers drew off of jazz musicians. A lot of jazz musicians were inspired by classical composers. So, I mean, even back to stories about how Charlie Parker used to walk around with Stravinsky's Firebird Suite around with him everywhere, you know. You hear a lot of like orchestral settings. A lot of times with jazz vocalists, you'll always hear like a Dinah Washington or Ella Fitzgerald with strings behind them. Charlie Parker also made a record that's Charlie Parker and strings. So the two aren't exclusively separate. They all need each other. And it's just a different way that these two genres honestly utilize the same chords. There's only 12 notes, right? You know, they can only be arranged in so many different combinations, and it's just a different aesthetic that's put to it. And I love that it's Duke Ellington that's being highlighted, because this is a composition that most people aren't aware of. I mean, Ellington composed a lot for orchestra. There's the Far East Suite, but we don't get to hear it in that context. We just think of him as that swinging big band leader, which he is, and he was fantastic at it. But he was a very astute arranger and writer. And his point was just to make music for all instruments to play. It wasn't necessarily that he wanted to be pegged in one category over another. He just wanted people to experience what was coming out of his mind, you know. And so this is a fun one for me because I wasn't super familiar with the piece. But it's got some written part that goes very well with the orchestra, and then in the true essence of jazz,
a lot of it is improvisational. And so that's where I feel like I excel. So I'm not as nervous to be in a quote unquote classical context as I normally would be. I get to do a little bit of both, and that's fun. So.
Well, I love hearing about the connection between classical and jazz, and it harkens back to the beginning of our 40th season. Audiences may remember that ICO featured the Mary Lou Williams Zodiac Suite. And Mary Lou was, of course, a jazz composer, a jazz musician, and but she wrote this piece for orchestra that is now getting its sort of second coming. And with Aaron Deal and his crew, we're seeing performances of that around the country now. And it just, it makes me think, okay, well, we're doing this a little bit ourselves, because I'm not sure we see so much of the Ellington Classical. And of course we've got the Three Black Kings, as well as a movement from the river, one of his ballets, which, I mean, I don't know that people realize he wrote for ballet.
It's and they're both stunning, stunning works. I think that's what I really like about what we are highlighting as part of this Black aesthetic. There is such a tenderness and vulnerability to the music. I mean, each composer, whether we're talking about William Grant Still or Margaret Bonds or Harry Burley, Duke Ellington, man, they are all such humanistic composers. And this music is all a human story. The story itself is a human story. And I love the opportunity to use music as a way to zoom in and zoom out simultaneously with this cosmic experience that we're all living on the planet. And music becomes such a wonderful and ubiquitous translator of that language and of that aesthetic for everyone. So I hope people are going to go into it listening that way. You know, this does not have to be your standard orchestral concert where, you know, it doesn't have to be that. It is, and it can be, but man, we really have an opportunity to provide people with a deeper opportunity to experience and listen to classical music and to cultural stories a little bit differently and a little bit more intently.
Well, I would like to ask Jared, let's talk some about some of your other projects on the horizon. I know we have some excerpts here to share with audiences. Can you tell us about those and kind of what's next for you beyond Black Keys next month?
Sure. It's been unfortunate. It's been a very busy beginning of the year. But I, you know, back in 2000 or 2020, again, jazz musicians, you know, the clubs weren't open. We couldn't gig, we couldn't play. And so for Jazz Fest, the Indianapolis Jazz Foundation, they picked four groups to do like a digital performance. And so what my band Premium Blend decided to do is to make a documentary meets a concert. So we called it a docu-concert called 38th and Postmodernism. And so what we did is I had saxophonist, flutist Amanda Gardier arranged eight of the original Premium Blend tunes for an octet. And so we expanded, you know, kind of a jazz chamber orchestra, you could call it. And we provided those songs, became the soundtrack for the documentary, because we interviewed artists and creatives around the city just to talk about all the things that were happening in 2020 and how it was affecting everyone here in Indianapolis.
I think we're on the brink of something breaking.
There's not a normal to return to, dog. That's what people don't understand. There isn't a normal to go back to.
The fact that all of this is coming to a head is really forcing America itself to look in the mirror.
We are at a point in society where the pushback is happening.
We're trying to evaluate what can we do besides put it in a poem. Put it in a song. There has to be an and, right?
You make the soundtrack, the album's done. Now put it on a speaker, turn it up, and get to work.
It's kind of like a perfect storm to move the needle.
We are in the midst of a global pandemic. We have civil unrest happening. You also have a lot of people that are being very vocal. And I'm not gonna say they're waking up. I feel like they've always been awake. I feel like people are finally starting to listen.
After we listen, we need some damn action. As musicians and artists,
we don't have a choice but to, you know, let these times speak to you.
My people are suffering. I have to use that platform to speak on it.
There are people in this community now that are talking about these issues that I never dreamed in a million years would even acknowledge they existed.
The climate in Indianapolis has changed. The skyline has changed.
We're having our own Harlem Renaissance here in Indy.
Of course I'm optimistic. How could you not be?
And then, you know, I did a lot with the Children's Museum last year. So we released our fifth studio album and we performed it in the planetarium of the Children's Museum and we played it live. And I had a good friends of ours, DJ Boogie Bang and Ronald Craig Jr. of Elsewhere Digital Art Gallery. They did digital shorts that went with every single song. And so it was like this little mini cartoon thing set to live music in the Children's Museum. And so this coming up in April, looking forward to that. I was fortunate enough to be one of the three recipients of the New Works Grant Commission through Center for the Performing Arts at the Palladium. So I'll be debuting my three movement suite. I like to call it a petite suite on June 1st. And Joshua is going to be my piano player for that. So that concept is called Classical Scratch. And again, what Josh and I like to do is just show all the thorough lines of 300-400 years of Black contribution in music and in classics. So movement one is an homage to Black classical composers. Movement two is an homage to Black jazz composers and musicians. And then movement three, this being the 51st year of hip hop, is going to literally sample movement one and movement two into the third movement. And we're going to have a DJ scratching and spinning and an MC as we, you know, use those two components to show the final stage of Black contributions in music. And I know there's something else that I'm forgetting, but I just can't remember right now. So it's been a very fruitful season already. And to be honest, I'm just trying to take it one week at a time so I don't forget anything. So it's going to be a big collaborative year for both of us, you know, us collaborating, but also with other organizations around the city. And that's where the fun is for me. Presented is actually part of our fifth studio album called Virtue. Literally April 20th of 2023, we performed it at the Palladium. So it's great. I've got gigs on April 20th, 2 years in a row. It's awesome. But it was our presentation of, it was the debut of our new album, Virtue. And in a setting like that, it's just phenomenal. That room is absolutely beautiful. And honestly, I'd say it was probably one of our better performances of us playing that record for sure. So yeah, it was just a little snippet of what we're doing. And the song that I picked is called Pipsqueak. That was my homage to Thelonious Monk. It's very much in the style of Thelonious Monk. It's quirky and fun and short. And so is my little mini Schnauzer Scout, and her nickname is Pipsqueak. So I named it something that Monk would do, I think. So that's where that comes from.
All right, we'll cut to that right now.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Jared, for sharing that. I'm sure audiences will enjoy that. And of course, maybe check out that performance on June 1st, because it sounds really exciting. Joshua, you and I have kind of been dreaming and working on funding and access and how can we make Black Keys more than one night, even though the performance is only one night. And a key component of that is education. We found in some of our planning and just knowing how we can serve our community best, that if we can add to music curriculum and school, that is like the access point that people need to experience this music. So let's talk about some of the curriculum-based materials that we're creating and how we're going to get this out to schools so that we can enrich even more lives with this awesome program.
This is the fun part for me. I'm really looking forward to the concert, don't get me wrong. But you know how sometimes the show is over and you're like, now what? Right? It's a, and then what? And so I've always somewhat shied away from just doing one-offs. I've always wanted substance and something to live with a little bit more longevity after any performance. And we've done this before. We modeled this very much after What Makes Music American that we did a few years ago, and it worked really well. So the concert is what the concert is, but there's so much information, whether it be the biographies and histories of these composers or the social context in which they're writing. And so what we have done is we are creating a curriculum that goes along with this for K through 12. And then also we're having it professionally recorded by WFYI, and it will broadcast and air on TV later on this year, I believe sometime this summer. So people get to check it out again. And that video becomes made completely free and accessible to every public school in the state of Indiana for K through 12. So that way, this is beautiful music, but there's something to learn from it. And there's a course curriculum guide that meets state standards so that continuing education happens, so we can be in more places than we are physically able to. But the more important part is this stuff should have been in history books and in our music classes a long time ago. So we cannot save the entire world, but the ICO definitely continues to do its part. And I think that's the part that I'm really most excited about, is that this is not just a concert. This is a entertaining yet educationally driven performance and concept and program. And I applaud the ICO for more than meeting me halfway and using you all's resources to make sure that we make that happen. Because you're right, we spent a lot of time figuring out the funding, and we had to be wildly patient and like hopelessly hopeful and optimistic. And it pays off. If you do good work and sincerity, you get exactly what you need when you need it. So
that, and not being afraid to keep asking.
There's that. I eat no for breakfast, so it's all good. That's fine. We keep going until we get a yes.
I want to add, though, that for teachers that are interested in this program or in any of ICO's virtual education programs, you can access or request access from our website. There's a tab for education. You can choose which program. We have, of course, our K through 3 Tall Tales and Long Tales. We have What Makes Music American, which is really accessible for all ages. And then a more elevated program for high school, Domination and Defiance, which talks about social impact of music. And now we'll also have Black Keys that will be available next school year. And we have a lot of ways that teachers can use this program. Obviously, the program itself, it does not fit in one specific class time. So there's ways to kind of divide it up over multiple class periods to make it digestible. You could do it over a semester. I mean, really, the sky's the limit. We just want people to experience this music. So if you're interested in the program, visit our website, give us a call. That's icomusic.org. But if you found this podcast, I'm sure you can find our website easily also. So in thinking about funding, I feel like we should take a minute to try to recognize everyone that has stepped up to the plate. And there are so many of them. I think I can say with some confidence that this is probably the single most diversely funded, and diverse meaning like so many different sources of income to support the music and the performance and the broadcast and the education that maybe ICO has ever had. I've only been here 4 years, but even in looking historically, I feel like this program, everyone that's taken the time to learn about it has said, oh yeah, I want my name on that. I I want to be a part of this incredible collaboration. So the main sponsors, of course, are title sponsor and Genuine Wealth Advisors and the National Endowment for the Arts. We received a Challenge America grant for this grant. And then locally, I'll let Joshua talk about some of those sponsors. If you remember them, and if not, I do.
I will try to remember as many as I can. This really is a collaborative effort from the organization and from the artist standpoint. And so did my due diligence throughout, 2023 to apply for quite a few individual artist grants that would go for this. So absolutely grateful to the Herbert Simon Foundation through the Indianapolis Foundation and CICF gave us a creative, or we were awarded a creative risk grant where this is kind of a risky endeavor. It's not cheap and we want to make sure that we're seeing impacts on all of this. And so that funding is allowing us to actually professionally record this so that can live into perpetuity, or whatever that word is.
Perpetuity.
There we go. Thank you. So that's been a huge benefit. There's been other grants from CICF that have been going towards this project as well. Of course, there are the individual donors to the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra who specifically donated for this show. So that's all that I can remember at the top of my head, but no one gets anywhere by themselves. And this is just another illustration of that. Like, it really has been a national and a local, project in arms with everyone donating time, talent, and funding. So I'm just grateful.
Yes. Definitely. So that would be Glick Foundation also supporting us, Arts Midwest with a grant towards artist costs, Frost Brown Todd supporting Ken Yete's collaboration, The Lynx, the Indianapolis chapter supporting Ashley Baskin, and Eskenazi Health for helping support Joshua. Everyone that we've talked to, that we've had the opportunity to share this project with, has said yes in one way or another. And I just want to keep that momentum going because I know that the work that we're doing here is making a difference. And I'm so thankful that we've been able to collaborate on this project. And I'm looking forward to what year three of your residence looks like for the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra and how we can keep you involved beyond that as well. So it's not really part of this direct project, but the Catalyst Fund, which is through the League of American Orchestras, has really helped us bring you on. And that's a 3-year grant that will continue for one more year, but it's really changed, I think, the fabric and the navigation of this organization in many, many positive ways. So I'm grateful to you for helping us get to where we are today and kind of pushing us off as we continue on this journey here and the wonderful work that we're doing.
Yeah, and I say thank you. It's been a fun experience, and the collaborative part is the fun part. And I'm like, yo, let's keep it moving. We do good work and we work very well together. So like bigger and better, I think, for the next few years.
So if you don't have tickets for Black Keys, we do have a wait list going. It is a significant wait list, but you never know. I mean, things happen. So I encourage you to go ahead and sign up for that. And who knows, if we get enough response, it might change some of the aspects that we have planned. So please do sign up if you're interested. Make sure that you also sign up for the ICO's newsletter so that you can learn about other events that we're doing. We do have an incredible partnership in May with Dance Kaleidoscope, and there's 3 performances of that. So there's still some opportunities to hear some fabulous classical music. And I think that was everything I wanted to make sure that we said today. So I look forward to seeing those of you that do have tickets on April 20th. We're going to have a wonderful experience. And I'm realizing we didn't talk about the art in the lobby. Would you like to talk about that?
Yes, that's a nice little,
boat. No, we're going to talk about art for a minute.
It's a great little segue. I really want this to be as immersive and deep of an experience as possible. Whenever I go to events, I'm always looking around. What's in the lobby? What's the music that's playing? Because it sets the tone before you even walk into the place. I think that's just really important. I'm so fortunate, and the city of Indianapolis is fortunate, to call home and friends of just tremendously and nationally recognized Black visual artists who what I do with music on a canvas or on a stage, they are doing the exact same thing on their prepper canvases. And so why not highlight every aesthetic of Black artistry and contributions, from the music to the movement and choreography of Kenyette, to the visual artists who literally are setting the stage and the scene and the backdrop for, you know, just expressions of refinement and joy and levity and, I don't know, just whatever artsy things that, you know, we all think about. And so we've got the wonderful Deanna Craig, Rebecca Robinson, Billy Hoodoo, and then also Ray Parker. And these are all individuals who make up the 18 Art Collective here in Indianapolis. They are absolutely stunning artists. And so they each will be bringing about 3 to 4 medium to large size canvas original pieces to just kind of give you that ambiance and that set and setting as you are walking through the lobby right before the show. And the best part of it is, if you like it, buy it. And so they will have them priced to sell, and you can have an original work be a part of your collection. It's like a keepsake from this awesome concert we're going to put on in about a month. So really grateful for their participation and how they also see the vision and are helping us contribute to that as well. So
I'm looking forward to that. I think our lobby is beautiful, but it's lacking in art. So I think this will be a wonderful way for audiences to really get started as the second they walk in the door as to what we have in store for them. So thank you, Joshua, Jared, appreciate your time today. And thank you to our audiences for joining us for this special episode. And we'll see you at the ICO.